Welcome to the Fit 40 podcast, where we take all the confusing, conflicting fitness and nutrition information and break it down so that you can live your healthiest, strongest, most energized life. I'm your host, Brian Fitzsimmons. Let's get it started. All right. Today, we're going to be talking about how to build lean body mass. Now, this is meant to be a complement to two things. One is the Toned in 20 workouts in the Fit 40 free resources. If you don't know what that is, just go down to the show notes or in the comments. If you're in the group right now, I'm going to drop the link to that. It's 20 workouts that you can do at home in the gym in 20 minutes or less if you got bands, dumbbells, or body weight. So anybody can do them. Also, it's going to be for the guest blog post that I'm going to be writing for Rachel Trotta, who was also a podcast guest previously. If you haven't caught that episode, go back a few. She dropped so many good tips, so much good knowledge, and this is my attempt to help her audience as well as mine by providing more and more value. So let's do this. How to build lean body mass. So what we're going to cover today is one, how to eat to build lean body mass. Number two is how to train to build lean body mass. And three is common issues that people have and what to do about it. So how to eat for lean body mass. So when it comes to this, when it comes to the eating, two things are the most important. Number one is overall calories, and number two is protein. Now, when it comes to the calories, we want to make sure that we're eating enough, because if you go on a starvation diet and think, hey, I'm going to lift a bunch of weights, I'm going to build a bunch of muscle, burn a bunch of body fat, that's not quite how this works. Okay. Now, that being said, if you're a beginner, and what I mean by beginner is a low training age. So if you're new to strength training or pushing weight, like weights in a way where you're increasing the demand on your body, and this is the first time doing it, you can get away with being in a slight calorie deficit and still build some muscle while being in that deficit. You can also do this in maintenance. Okay, ideally, you'd like to do it in maintenance because then you can burn body fat and build muscle at a similar rate, so that that way, eventually, when you not tap out, but when your muscle building potential starts to go down, because as we get better at lifting weights, as we start building muscle, you don't experience like the newbie gains like in the beginning. It's a lot smaller of increases as you get better and better and better. So that being said, when you do that in maintenance, eventually we don't build as much muscle as fast, but we're still burning body fat at the same rate. So now you've put yourself into a deficit, and that's when most people start to see the scale start to move. So I'm a big fan of doing it in maintenance. And then when you're advanced, there's gaintenance or just going into a surplus. So gaintenance is basically like striving for maintenance, but letting life happen. So not being super tight on calories. So if you're tracking, for example, go out one extra night a week, or like have a few drinks here and there, and like just kind of live your life and strive for maintenance, knowing that you're kind of going to put yourself in a little bit of a surplus just by not being too crazy with it. So you feel like you're in maintenance, but you're going to let life put you in that situation where you have extra calories to build more muscle. Or you could just intentionally go into a surplus and track everything and do it that way. Now, next is protein. When it comes to protein, we want ideally about 0.7 to 1 gram per pound of lean body mass. So you just, if you don't have access to a DEXA scanner or an InBody, just go by your goal body weight and use that and multiply it by 0.7, or get 1 gram per pound of that. Now, one of the easiest ways to get your footing with this, if you're not really used to tracking protein, like one would be just to track it in a MyFitnessPal or chronometer and do it that way. But a good way to get an even distribution throughout the day, which is important with protein, we don't want to just have it all in one meal, because we get better results from spacing it out throughout the day. This is why people who intermittent fast don't see the muscle gains that people that do intermittent fast do not see the same type of gains as people that don't intermittent fast, because they're spreading protein distribution throughout the day. Now, is it a big difference? Not really. But if we're trying to do what's best, then don't intermittent fast and try and put on muscle. But one way to space it out is by dividing up into palms. So if you have a protein goal of, say, 100 grams of protein, okay, your palm is about roughly 20 to 25 grams of protein. So if you were to cut off like all your fingers and get a piece of meat that is the size of your palm, that or a scoop of protein or something like that, it's about 20 to 25 grams of protein. So ladies, I say assume that your palm is 20 grams, and then gentlemen, assume yours is 25, just because on average, ladies have a smaller hand size than men do. So divide it by that. So let's say you're a lady who has 100 grams of protein and you want to divide it by palms. So 20 grams, we're assuming for that palm, for 100 grams of protein would be 5 palms throughout the day. So if you're not a big fan of breakfast, get like one palm size at breakfast time. And then for lunch and dinner, try and get 2 palm sizes. Or you could get a palm at breakfast, lunch, and dinner and have 2 protein snacks, like a protein shake or a protein bar, that are about 20 grams of protein there. And that way you can evenly distribute it throughout the day. Now, some other important factors to go over when it comes to nutritionally are sleep, stress management, and hydration. Because when we have these in check, it makes it so much easier to see really good progress. But when they're not in check, like sleep, for example, when you don't sleep well, you don't recover well. And when you don't recover well, you can't put as much effort into your workouts. And when you can't put as much effort into your workouts, you're not going to get as good of a stimulus and as good as an adaptation. And we're going to cover that in a second. So basically, if you sleep like crap, you're not going to gain as much muscle. You're also more likely to make poor food decisions the next day. So you're not going to build as much muscle, and you're probably going to put on more body fat than you want to. Okay. Stress management, same thing. If you're stressed beyond belief, your hormones are in a place where it's not exactly conducive to building muscle and feeling good and moving more. So that is going to mess with it too. And then hydration, if you're not hydrated, then your performance in the gym is going to go down. That's not an opinion. That's just a straight up fact. When you don't have enough water in your system, your performance just drops. And then when that happens, you're not going to be able to build as much muscle, and you're not going to be able to recover as much when you're outside of the gym. So again, this is stuff that we want to make sure that we have down. All right. Now, when we're building lean body mass, like you heard me just say, we're aiming for adaptation. And adaptation, the equation is work plus recovery equals adaptation. So if you are working like crazy, beating yourself up day after day, and you're not getting good sleep, you are not eating good quality food, you're stressed out beyond belief, you're not getting your water, okay, it's going to lead to very subpar results, or maybe no results at all. And it's really setting you up for a very high chance of injury. And when you get injured, can't go to the gym, and everything goes backwards. So just so you know. All right. Now, here's how to train to build lean body mass. The biggest thing that we want to focus on is progressive overload. And for anybody who's not familiar with this concept, it's a strength training technique that involves gradually increasing the intensity of your workouts. Okay, what happens when we progressively overload? Number one, your bones bend. Now, that might sound scary, but it's a good thing because it's a micro bend. It's not like a bend like you're going to break in half. You're not going to break your bones, assuming that you're not loading way too much weight. And I'm talking like a crazy amount of weight, like trying to squat 300 pounds the first day in the gym. Now, if you go up 5 or 10 or even 20 pounds, that's not going to happen. All right. So if you're scared of increasing the weight, don't be, because we want a 5 or 10 or 15 pound increase each week or each month, because that's going to get us these micro bends. And when that happens, your body gets the signal to say, hey, our bones are bending. This shouldn't be happening. Like, we need to pack on more density. We need to make them stronger. It's kind of like you have pillars in front of your house holding up the overhang thing. I wish I knew the name for it. And you're basically just adding weight on, and you want to make sure that it's stable. So you got to make it denser and denser and denser. So that's what bone mineral density is. Apologies for the poor analogy. And then along with that is your muscles are stressed. Now, a lot of people get fixated on muscle damage, like trying to tear down as many fibers so a lot of them build back. But when it comes to muscle building, that's not the best. It's not the most important thing. Is it going to happen? Yes. But it's more about just giving your muscles that stimulus that say, hey, we're not really at the point where we can do more. So you need to pack on more muscle. And when you start chasing the tearing your muscles down over and over again, as much as you possibly can, that usually results in subpar recovery because you're giving your body too much of a stimulus and too much work that it can't recover from. So there's the right amount. There's not, we don't want to go for the most possible. We want to go for the right amount for your body based on what you can handle, based on your recovery. And that can be influenced by the stuff that we talked about before and also age. Because if you've noticed, when you drink right now, like in your 40s, 50s, 60s, you don't recover quite as fast as you did when you were 20. So that being said, you got to kind of take everything into account and be like, what can I handle and what's going to get me the best adaptation, not what's the most that I could possibly do. And then third is cardiovascular system is stressed, which forces it to become more efficient, which improves things like circulation, heart health, and all that good stuff. So progressive overload has a lot of good stuff that comes from it. Now, what are some ways that we can progressively overload? So first and foremost is to increase the load. And what I mean by load, it's the technical term for increasing weight. All right. Next is to increase the power. That's the load times velocity, basically moving the weight faster. So let's say like you're sticking with the same weights and on the very last like three or four reps, you're pushing as hard as you can, but it's slowing down. That's how you know that you're using heavy enough weight. Now, if you were to come back the next week and on those last reps, now instead of you struggling and going really slow, you go at a normal rate. You have now increased the velocity, which means that you are improving. So that's a really good way to do it. You don't have to go 1,000 miles an hour and work on power development like crazy. You can just go by, okay, these were moving slow last week and now they're moving faster this week because it's easier. That's pretty cool. Let's see what else we got. Increase the repetitions per set. Now, this comes with a caveat and I'm going to get into it in a little bit, but if you could go from 5 repetitions 1 week and then you go up to 6 and then you go up to 7, that's the goal right there, especially when you get to the point where like you're not increasing 5 pounds every single week over and over and over again. You eventually hit a point where you can't just keep adding weight. And that's when you start adding like 1 rep or 2 reps. Then you increase the sets per workout. Okay. So if you're doing 3 sets and you've kind of hit a plateau and you don't see a lot of progress, and then you bump it up to 4 sets, sometimes that can bust through plateaus as far as strength goes or building muscle. Okay. Then there's increasing the number of workouts per week. But again, there is a caveat to this. We're going to go over, you only really want to aim for like max 4 strength training workouts per week. And I say this specifically to the 40 plus crowd, because anytime you go past that 4 per week, you're getting into that zone. If you're pushing properly and you are training properly and you're not taking it easy, if you do that more than 4 times a week, it's very hard to recover from, especially if you tend to drink on the weekends or if your sleep isn't ideal. Like, you're just setting yourself up for a not ideal situation. So 4 is really the cap on that. But on the off days, you can do stuff, just not the super high fatigue strength training stuff. But I'm getting ahead of myself. We'll get into that. And then there's increasing range of motion. So instead of doing half repetitions, you do full repetitions, like all the way down, all the way up, instead of stopping halfway. But again, this is a little bit individualized and we're going to get into that. So some issues with the methods I just listed. First is adding in the workout days. Like I said, it can affect recovery to the point where it becomes counterproductive. For most people, 2 to 4 days of strength training is ideal. And then on the off days, you want restorative methods, things like zone 2 cardio. For anybody who's not familiar with that, basically it's any type of cardio where you can maintain a heart rate of 55 to 65% of your max heart rate. Now, there's apps and watches and straps that'll give you like a more accurate zone 2 based on your individual feedback. But if you want like a rough way to do it, you take your max heart rate, which is taking your age from 220. So for me being 31, it would be 220 minus 31. And then whatever, 55 to 65% of that number is your zone 2 range. Then there's also things like Pilates, restorative yoga, things like that, that have you feeling better. You don't want to do things on the off days that affect your workouts, because the workouts are like the main dish. We need to make sure that that's like our gauge of progress when it comes to building lean muscle and building lean body mass overall. So always want to make sure that you're coming back feeling stronger, feeling better, like you can give more, not that you're just dead all week. All right. Next is increasing range of motion. So some people, due to injury or anatomical limitations, this can potentially lead to injury if taken too far, or tweaks here and there. Just plain and simple, some of us are not built for certain ranges of motion for certain exercises, and that's okay. You just got to figure out what you're capable of and stay in that wheelhouse. And sometimes you'll be amazed that as you get stronger in a reduced range of motion, all of a sudden that strength and that coordination that you built up, doing it in a comfortable way, getting all these benefits, all of a sudden allows you to go a little bit further and do a little bit deeper of a squat, or bring your arms down a little bit lower in a bench press without the pain that you've previously had. So range of motion can adapt over time, but you want to make sure that you're staying within a range of motion that is comfortable for you and doesn't put you into bad pain where it's like in the joint or it's radiating or anything like that. We always want to focus on good pain, like the muscle burn. All right. And it's always best to add range of motion slowly. Like, so if it's your first day, go really slow, feel out the movement, and don't really rush through the movement. Because if you go, say you're doing a squat and you do 3 seconds down and you feel every inch of the way down, like, okay, I feel good. And then you get to a point where it's like, oh, this is not starting to feel so good. Then we'll stop right there and then stand back up and just stay in that range and you're good. And like I said, as you get stronger, you'll be able to go lower and lower ideally, or if that's your range, that's your range. There's no cheating. There's no, none of this like dogmatic crap that you hear all over the internet. Ass to grass squats, touch your bar to the chest. Like, that's a bunch of bullshit from the 80s that people who can't be bothered to learn about physiology and kinesiology and all this stuff, like, they just don't know what they're talking about. All right. Now, issues with certain methods. Number three is too many reps. So when you get into super high repetitions, it can lead to overuse injuries like tendonitis, bursitis, or any of the itises. Okay. Ideally, we want to stick to 5 to 15 repetitions. Okay. This is a good repetition range where you're not on the low end going so, so heavy that you're putting a ton of weight on your body and you're not stressing it to the point where you might not have the bracing technique to keep yourself safe. And then on the flip side, going too high, when you go into that 20, 30, 40, 50 rep range, like when you're doing cardio work or group classes and things like that, that can lead to overuse injuries, especially if your form is not ideal and you're doing it for so, so many reps over and over and over again. It's just setting yourself up for something bad to happen. Next is increasing weight. This is the best way for most people to progress, and it is increasing weight. I know a lot of people fear using more weight, but we're going to talk about that in detail, because if you progress slowly based on what your body gives you, this is the safest way to increase lean body mass and the safest way to exercise. So I don't just say that because I'm biased. I say that because there are hard facts. Now, for anybody who's in the Facebook group, you can see this image right here, and it is injuries per 1,000 hours of participation. Okay, so basically injury rates based on sport. And at the very top is elite rugby. No shocker there. Okay, any contact sport is going to have a higher injury rate than non-contact sports. Now, the interesting thing here is when it comes to running, okay, injuries per 1,000 hours of participation are at 12.1. And then just under that is the treadmill, which is about half, which is at 6 per 1,000. And then rowing machine is 6 per 1,000. And then as you get lower, we have powerlifting elite. Like, this is like people that lift that squat 1,000 pounds. We have 5.8. So even these people putting thousands of pounds on their body are still getting injured at a lower rate than the average person going for a run or going on the treadmill or a rower. Okay. And then under that, we have powerlifting elite international. Okay. These are the people that are the highest level and they get injured way less too. So they're at 3.6. And then under that is powerlifting adolescents. So these are young kids that are lifting as heavy as they possibly can. Okay, remember, running was 12, treadmill was 6, and rowing was 6 per thousand. For powerlifting for adolescents, it's 0.85 per thousand hours of participation. So we have all this weightlifting going on at elite levels, and they're being forced to use the barbell, which for most people just is not ideal. Now, if we take that and use dumbbells and bands and body weight, the chances for injury, because the amount that we can load those up goes down, so does the chance of injury, because now we're finding more joint-friendly positioning too. So you can assume that the amount of injuries for the average person working out in the gym are extremely low when we're lifting weights compared to running, doing the treadmill, and the rowing machine. Am I saying not to do that? No. But what I am saying is we have no issue going for a run or going to a cardio group class. But when it comes to increasing weight, all of a sudden we think that we're going to get hurt. And all I could think of was Dana Carvey as the SNL church lady going, "Well, now, isn't that special?" Okay, because it's feeding into our biases of, oh, if I lift heavy weights, I'm going to get hurt, when that's just not the case. The numbers do not agree. It's just that unfortunate bias of us thinking, oh, heavy weight is bad. It's going to crush us. It's going to get us hurt. And we need to challenge those beliefs if you really want to get the best results possible, live your best life, and feel incredible. So how heavy should we go? Now, ideally, we want to stay within 1 to 3 repetitions short of technical failure. So what technical failure is that point where, let's say you're doing a squat and you're going up, down, up, down, and you're doing great. And then those last couple of reps, even though you're pushing just as hard, if not harder, are starting to slow down. And then eventually you hit that point where you're pushing, 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 and you're almost there, and your body goes, "Nope, I'm done." That's technical failure. So we want to stop about 1 to 3 reps shy of that point. Now, that comes with knowing what failure feels like. So if you have no idea what failure feels like, you have zero concept of this. And this whole thing is pretty much pointless until you've experienced technical failure in the gym. And in the beginning, technical failure is not a bad thing. It's not super risky, assuming that we're progressing our weight slowly and you're listening to your body and not pushing again into that bad pain. But if it's the good pain, the muscle burn and all of that, then you can go to technical failure and be totally fine. And now if you want to make it even safer, you can do this on machines. That way, if you do say have that technical failure point and you're scared of dropping the weight or something, if you're on a machine, you literally just like bring it down, let it go, and you're good. You're seated or whatever, you're fine. And then when it comes to like, if you're working in with a barbell in a squat rack or something, make sure that those safety bars are high enough so that if you do hit technical failure, you can just drop it right on the safety bars and you're going to be completely fine. Okay. Just be smart, be safe, and you should be totally okay. Now, my favorite method to work on technical failure is the double up method for beginners. So the way that this double up method works is we take a repetition range. So I like 5 to 10. You could also do 4 to 8 or 6 to 12 and apply it in that way. But basically, this is the gist of it. So let's say we're doing goblet squats and you grab 15 pounds week one. Okay. For week one, you're going to do 3 or 4 sets where you do 5 repetitions on the first few. So you do, for here, we have 4 sets. For the first 3, we do 15 pounds for 5 repetitions. For the first set, we do 5 repetitions for the second set, 5 for the third. And then on the fourth, we say, hey, we're going to go for at least double. So aim for 10. And you could, if you hit 10, you can stop there. But if you want to challenge yourself and push past that to see what technical failure feels like, go past that. And what happens is, and I've seen this happen in person and online multiple times, people go for that last set and they get 20, 25, 30. And even though I said like back before, like going that high usually results in overuse, it's okay for a week or two. It's not, we just don't want that to be every single workout. So in the beginning, totally fine, especially if it's only going to be for a couple weeks, because what happens when you get past that double up, when you get past that 10, you increase the weight the next week you come in. So week two, now instead of 15 pounds, we're going to go for 20 pounds. Because if you can get 10, 15, 20 repetitions with 15 pounds, you absolutely freaking can do 20 pounds, which is only five more pounds for five repetitions. Okay. Your body, that's a way to prove that, hey, you are capable of more. If you can do double, you can add 5 pounds. All right. Next, for that week two, we do that 20 pounds for five repetitions for those first three sets. And then on the last set, let's say we go for double and again, we hit 10 repetitions. Awesome. So because we got 10 with that 20 pounds, we're going to go to 25 pounds the next week and then do 5, 5, 5. And then on the last one, go for 10. But let's say that we didn't get 10. Now you only get 8. So we did 25 pounds for 8 repetitions. That means we didn't double up. That means we stay with that weight for week 4. So we go for 5, 5, 5 for the first three sets on week 4. And then on the last one, we try and get 10 again. Now, this is where that adding a repetition for progressive overload comes into play. Because if you got 8 last week and you get 9 this week, we have progressed. And then if you come back the next week and get 10, awesome. We progressed, which means now we added a repetition, which is awesome. And we doubled up. So we're going to go up to 30 pounds. And then what's probably going to happen is that for that 30 pounds, you're going to get 5, 5, 5 across the board, maybe 6 or 7 on the last set. And then you keep following that pattern. And that allows you to prove to yourself over and over again that I am strong. I am capable of using more weight than this. And then that's going to give you plenty of practice because eventually you're going to get to that point where you're experiencing technical failure many, many times. And then when we get to a point where you've done this for a few months and you're like, okay, I know where I need to be, then you can start saying, hey, I'm going to stop 1 to 3 reps shy of that point. And what that's going to do is allow you to get enough stimulus from that specific exercise to build lean body mass. All right. And you'll find that 1 to 3 repetitions in reserve is going to come later and later and later. So like, let's say when you hit 10 repetitions, that's absolute failure. You're going to stop at around like 7 or 8. The next week, you may feel that sensation of like, oh, I got 1 to 3 reps left. Instead of being at 7 or 8 reps, now it's going to be at 8 or 9 reps. So you're still going to be able to progress over time. Basically what it is, what it's doing is when we get to failure, we're really dipping into the recovery bucket as you get heavier and heavier in weights. So it's allowing us to get the stimulus to grow, but we're not getting that crazy amount that won't be as easy to recover from. So just making recovery easier so you get better results. Sorry if I went off on a tangent and some of your eyes glazed over a little bit. That's the technical way of talking about this. So I hope everybody's with me. I hope I didn't lose anybody there. Okay. So also, if you get to the point where you can't get the repetitions that are prescribed, my personal preference is not to go lower in weight. So like, let's say you're having an off week and you just aren't feeling it and you don't have the energy and you're like, okay, I can't really do this weight for this many reps. I would decrease the repetitions. So let's say you're going for 5 repetitions and you're like, oh God, 5 feels like death. Just go for 3 that week. And that's okay. So if you go like 1 or 2 reps less and we're keeping the weight high, your body is going to get that stimulus that, hey, we're still strong enough to hold this weight, but just not the stimulus for that many repetitions. All right. Now let's talk about soreness. When it comes to soreness, it usually just comes from doing new stuff, using heavier weights for the first time, doing more rounds, doing more reps for the first time, or trying a different tempo for the first time. Like I haven't gone for an extended run in forever. If I go outside and I run for a little bit, I'm going to be sore as hell. Does that mean I built muscle? No, it just means I did something new. So for that reason, don't chase soreness. Just accept that it's a byproduct of hard work. And the goal should be like week one, you're going to be pretty sore. And I'm not saying that's the goal. I'm just saying that's the expectation. Week one, because everything's new, it should feel a little bit sore. But as you progress in your program, assuming that you're doing the same types of workouts each week and we're not chasing the variety itch and we're not changing things up all the time, which you shouldn't be doing. Okay. Assuming that we're sticking to a program where we're repeating workouts each week, you should be feeling less and less sore as time goes on. So if you're doing the same weights week after week and you're chasing that one more rep, you should be feeling a lot less sore week after week. So how sore should you be if you do get sore? Ideally 1 to 2 days max, and not in a debilitating way where you can't get up from the toilet seat or you feel like really sketched out going down the stairs or anything like that. This should be like a comfortable soreness, like, oh, I feel like I did something, and no more than that. Otherwise, you probably overdid it. Okay. And like I said, week one of a new phase sometimes lasts longer, especially if we hit it hard that first one. So that first week, just try and do what you can to get through the workout and not go crazy. Like lift heavy, but not super heavy, if that makes sense. We want to feel like we're doing something, but not really pushing it until week two or three or four. I take that back. Don't wait till week four. Push it on week two or three. And then if you're chronically sore, that's really not a good thing. And I know some people like really kind of get off on being sore all the time. And these are those people that you see in the gym every single day for multiple hours. And then they look the exact same year after year after year. And they're like, I don't get it. I work my butt off and I just don't get any results. This is usually why, because they're over exceeding their recovery. They're not getting any adaptation and they're just beating their body up. So if you find yourself less sore doing the same amount of work, that's a great thing. It means you're building lean muscle, growing denser bones. So it's really a good thing to be less sore over time, assuming that we're doing the exact same amount of work or more work. And something to keep in mind, it's not about how much you can do. It's about how much you can do and fully recover from. If you recover like crap, you haven't earned the ability to work harder. That's just plain and simple. It's a lot of people experience this when they try and copy an athlete or a celebrity's workout program. And they're like, why don't I look like them? Well, when Brad Pitt was getting ready for Fight Club, he wasn't drinking on the weekends or having a glass of wine every single night. And like Aaron Judge is not up at all hours of the night taking care of their kids or stressed out beyond belief because their boss is being an asshole. Well, I don't know. Maybe the Yankees manager might be. But regardless, the point is, there's a lot of factors that play into this. It's not just the workouts. It's also, if not more so, the recovery aspect. And usually celebrities and athletes have a lot less of a stress load because they make a good amount of money and can take a lot of things off their plate. Us average folk, not always. All right, so cardio options. I know everybody loves their cardio, and that seems to be the one that always gets done. The strength workouts take a hit sometimes, but for some reason, cardio always finds its way into the picture. Okay. So when it comes to cardio, when it comes to high intensity interval training, which everybody kind of goes nuts over, your workouts should basically be a HIIT workout. Because if you're lifting heavy weights, that's a lot of high effort for like, say, 10 to 20, maybe 30 seconds, depending on how many reps you're doing. And then a lot of rest in between, because true high intensity interval training is short bouts of work that are really hard and then enough rest afterwards. So if you're doing, say, 20 to 30 seconds of an exercise and then you're resting for a minute or two, that basically is like a HIIT split. So treat your workouts like that and optimize the rest between sets. If you're going exercise at like set to set to set without any rest, you are half-assing it. It might feel like you're doing really hard work and you will feel like you're putting so much into it. But if you rest a minute or two, the amount of weight you can lift, the amount of repetitions you can do is absurdly, like, it is so much more than if you don't rest. So if you want to half-ass it, but feeling like you are pushing it, then don't rest. But if you want to get the best results and feel really good while you do it, rest. Again, 1 to 2 minutes between sets is usually good for most people. And then zone two, which I mentioned before, is the preferred off day selection as a recovery tool, because you're going to get those cardiac benefits. Like if you're able to do zone two for longer or do zone two in a lower heart rate zone, then that means your body is adapting in a positive way. And it's also a way for your body to progress without creating excess fatigue. And then All in all, any method is fine as long as it doesn't affect your workouts, like we were talking about before. Okay, if it's not affecting your workouts and you're coming back feeling stronger and able to do more work and progress over time, you can pretty much do anything on your off days. Now, if an exercise hurts, okay, number one, immediately get rid of the weight. Okay, then once you're done, once you've removed the weight, try body weight or a regressed version. So like, let's say you were doing split squats and your knees were bugging you. Now, instead of doing single leg, a regressed version of that would be a regular squat. So if you're able to do a regular squat without pain, then it might be worth doing that. Or you can reduce the range of motion. So like, again, let's say we're doing lunges or split squats. Okay. Instead of lunging or doing a split squat all the way where you touch your knee to the floor, try and put a pad down so you don't have to go as low. And if that doesn't hurt, great. Just use that range of motion. And that is next, which is testing your range of motion. So go slow, feel it out, and feel if you can like stop just before the pain point, because the way to get out of pain for a lot of people is to stay in motion, not to take time off, not to get stale, but to do whatever level of activity and whatever range of motion your body allows for if you want to get back in action faster. Next is testing tempo. Like I said, slow it down. On top of being able to feel where that pain point is, a lot of times people just don't brace hard enough. So when you slow down, you subconsciously brace all the muscles that you should be bracing. Now, this is because when we rush through things, we lose tension in our core. We lose tension in our upper back muscles. And those things, when they're not tight, can result in some pain. Next is testing with pauses. Sometimes, again, this is going to increase the brace when you pause, say, at the bottom of a squat. When you hold it down there, you'll notice your abs start to get tighter. Like every muscle starts to squeeze a little bit harder. And that's good, because when we brace that hard, it means that our muscles are squeezing hard and providing cushion to our bones and our joints and our ligaments and tendons. And we want the muscle doing the majority of the job because it's way less stress on the joints. So squeeze extra tight. Use that pause. And then once you've found that version of your exercise that you can do without bad pain and you only have the good pain, which is that muscle burn, then you could start adding weight back. And now here's some simple swaps that a lot of people can benefit from. Like for example, if your squats or lunges hurt and you did that whole thing and they still hurt and they're no good, try hinging. So hinging, what it is basically your hips doing the motion instead of your knee. So when you do an RDL, your knee to your ankle, that shin stays vertical and your knee does not travel forward. When your knee travels forward, that creates a shear force. And sometimes that shear force is just too much for people to handle and their body is just not ready for it, which is totally fine. So when you eliminate that shear force and you just do RDLs where your butt goes back and forth instead of your knees, then that can feel a lot better. Also bridges. Now, bridges have a little bit more of a shear force because your knee bends a lot at the bottom. But that being said, when you're at the top, your shin is vertical and you don't have that force on you up there. So if you're able to handle it, sometimes bridges feel better too, or hip thrusts and things like that. Now, if your shoulders hurt, sometimes it's just from going too far. And a lot of people, when they do rowing or pressing, their elbow goes past their shoulder, which can cause an anterior dump in the shoulder, which basically means your shoulder rolls forward, which puts a lot of pressure on the front of your shoulder, which can potentially cause problems. Is it bad for everybody? No. But for some people, it does irritate their shoulders and it hurts. So for those types of people, it can help if you're doing a press or a chest fly, doing it on the floor, because that way your elbows physically can't go past your shoulders. And then also because this is a very underrated way for many people that get hurt or experience tweaks, when you're doing rowing, like dumbbell rows or machine rows, try and imagine there is a wall behind you and you don't want your elbow to go through the wall and create a hole in the wall. You want your shoulder to tap the wall and then your elbow to tap the wall. And then when you're on the floor, you want your shoulder to tap the floor and then your elbow to tap the floor, because that means your shoulder is working in unison and it's moving and it's smoother and it's not just your glenohumeral joint taking the brunt. And then when in doubt, slow it down. Like I said before, A lot of times it could just be a lack of bracing. You might be moving perfectly, but you're just too loose. So squeeze when you're holding stuff that you're pressing or pulling, squeeze the bar as tight as you can. When you're holding on to dumbbells, when you're doing squats or deadlifts, squeeze the crap out of the dumbbell or the barbell, whatever you're using. And then if your feet are on the floor, try and grip the floor using your feet. Imagine like your feet are like your hands and you want to squeeze the floor. Now, we don't want our toes to crunch up. We just want to press down so you feel like a tripod foot, which is basically your big toe, your pinky toe, and your heel all being in contact with the floor the entire time. So it feels like you're standing in cement. Then when you do that, you'll notice as I'm doing it right now, as I'm sitting explaining this and digging my feet into the floor, you can feel your calves get tight. You could feel your quads and your hamstrings get tight. And that's what we call irradiation. So when you squeeze a muscle, all the surrounding muscles squeeze to a degree. Easy way to explain this is squeeze your fist right now, but not too hard, just a little bit. Okay. Now, you know, all the muscles in your hand are going to get tight. Now squeeze just like 50% harder. Now you feel your forearm get a little bit tight. Now squeeze a little bit harder than that and harder. Good. Now you feel your biceps get a little bit tighter. Now squeeze as hard as you possibly can. All of a sudden, now you feel your shoulder and your chest get into it. And you're like, oh, all these muscles are getting involved. That's what we want to have happen when we're lifting. Because again, the more tension we can create, the safer you're going to be and the stronger you're going to be. All right. Now, when it comes to the golden rule for exercise, the exercise should fit you, not the other way around. Okay. Everyone has a unique anatomy and physiology. And sometimes what we hear as perfect form is not right for you. Okay. There is no one way to do an exercise for everybody because we're not all going to do it the exact same way because we were not born the exact same way. One of the best cases of this is your hip anatomy. So, fun fact, they have hundreds, if not thousands, of different variations of hip replacements because our hips are all different. Okay. Now, what does that matter? When it comes to squats, it matters a whole heck of a lot because if you have, say, a shallow hip socket, this is going to result, assuming that you have good ankle mobility, in a picture perfect looking squat where your torso is really vertical and you're able to touch your butt to your heels. And kind of that standard squat that we see online and people are like, everybody should squat this way. But let's say you're the type of person like myself who has deeper hip sockets. Okay, you're going to lean forward a little bit more. And then let's take femur length into account. If you have longer femurs and a really deep hip socket, you're going to lean forward a lot in your squat. Now, if you have a shallow hip socket and you have shorter femurs, that's going to result in a more vertical squat. So, are either of these, is one better than the other? No, it's just different. And it really just depends on one, if you're able to do it in a way that doesn't cause bad pain. And two, if you're able to progress over and over and over again without feeling like you're off balance or anything like that. Okay. Just know that there's no one right way to do things. I will repeat that over and over and over again. Do what's right for you. And if you're trying to bias certain muscles, you might need to experiment with different types of exercises. Like, for example, like if you're squatting and you want to, say, grow your quads, but you're leaning forward so far and your femurs are so long that you're really not getting your knee traveling forward a lot and you're not feeling it in the quad as much as you are in your lower back and your glutes, then it might be worth switching to a lunging variation where you can like put your heel up a little bit and bias it in a different way. Now, I'm not going to go into the weeds on that because that's just not the level that we want to go to today, but just know that there's always hundreds of different variations that you can do that will achieve the job. All right. I hope that this presentation helped a little bit with understanding exactly what we're going after and what you should be focusing on when it comes to figuring out how to work out and how to do things properly. Because if you do, say, the Tone in 20 workouts, you'll notice that a lot of these variations are kind of like what I talked about, floor variations or squatting and hinging. So feel free to manipulate it in ways that make sense based on this training. And if you're also checking out the guest post that I did for Rachel, then you'll see it in there too, explained in the written words, so probably a little bit more organized than me rambling. So definitely check that out. Thank you guys for tuning in, and I will see you all next week. Thank you so much for listening all the way through to the end. If you want to see live video trainings each week, get access to all the free resources, and participate in the monthly challenges where I give away tons of prizes, then go ahead and click the link in the show notes so you can join the Fit 40 Family Facebook group. And if you found this information helpful and you want to start putting it to use, as well as learning the skills and strategies you will need to get the results you want and keep them for life, that's what Fit 40 online coaching is for. If you're interested, all you have to do is click the link in the show notes to apply. I'll get back to you quickly so we can set up a call to see if coaching is the right fit for you. Thanks again for listening. I'll see you next week.